For September the 5th, 2025, we talk about Metal Gear Solid Delta, Heartworm, Sprawl, and much more. Welcome to Level 556. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Jala Prentiss.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. We took last week off, so thank you for understanding that. And now we're here, and we're joined by Jala. Hi, Jala.
Hi, I'm here, surprising everyone yet again.
I don't know that it was a huge surprise. It was last minute on Dennis's part. You got confused because of the long weekend, but...
Yeah, well, that's okay. I mean, you know, he got all discombobbled. Anniversary mm-hmm. is a kind of important thing, so...
Yes, you know. True.
Other places supposedly. To be, and so on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway, he tapped me in last minute. So I did actually get to do my usual kind of preparation and everything, but I was tapped in randomly.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it.
Well, it was about time for me to show back up again. It's been about a month.
So what's going on?
Yeah, so I'm going to keep it nice and light, as much light as one can. My father passed away a few weeks ago during August, and, you know, there was a lot to do for basically a couple of weeks between family coming and clean out and all that other mess. But that happened. I have had 1 week back of my quote unquote new normal, and my mm-hmm. mother is eating us out of house and home. She's a small terror. She's a very small, very slight woman who is in a walker because she's disabled, but she has eaten so many snacks. I mentioned this because we used to have like separate food in the house, so that my parents, you know, they decided they wanted their stuff separate so that they could not eat our food or whatever. And so now that my dad passed away, we are combining all of our foodstuffs, which means that everything is fair game for mother to eat, which, you know, now means that, like, we do this confused, wait a minute, I thought we had X. Where did it go? Did you eat it? No. Mother, did you eat it? Oh, yeah, it was really good. Okay.
It disappeared into mom.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that just means that for a little while, we're going to have this flux period of, is mom going to eat the snacks? And then, like, we're going to have to make sure we keep whatever she likes on hand so that there's extra.
if you're in a house, there should be snacks there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. But, like, you know, it's been years and years and years of, like, separate, oh, no, we won't eat your stuff. You know, mm-hmm. no, we're not going to touch your stuff. And then now it's like, I'm here to eat all of your foods. You know, which like, that's great. I mean, you know, it's very cute and funny when we discover what's going on. So.
Yeah. New utility for higher up shelves now, I guess.
She's not a toddler.
But she also, she has a frozen shoulder and she's not going to be reaching up above her. So good call. Yes, actually. up high is a place that she could not get to. And also very, very low. So anyway, other than that, I also got a new tattoo. Yes, another tattoo. This one's not in a sexy place. It's just on my arm. So okay. It says focus and go. And it's right on my forearm. Just past where the knee pit is, and it's facing me so that I can read it when I look down. Mm-hmm. And so focus and go. That's me telling myself, you know, little reminder of, you know, getting back to everything because it's been a little while. So
yeah.
I did that, and yes, I'm excited. I wanted to say one more thing. Last time I talked about my Care Bears tattoo that's on my mm-hmm. butt, and it's Care Bears heart. Well, good news for anybody who was interested in seeing that. I am now going back to working on pole as part of my focus on doing my fitness stuff again. Okay. So that means that now I'm actively on pole, which means eventually it will have pole shorts. It will. And then it will post them, you know, like a video or something. And then, you know, you will see by extension.
Yeah. Care Bear is coming out.
The Care Bear just flashing there on my butt cheek while I'm spinning around a pole. Yes. So, hooray. How is everybody else doing and what's going on?
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Not too much. I think the main thing I did over the weekend, I'll talk about in the grind section, but I did see Jaws over the weekend. It was
the 50th anniversary?
Yeah. So there's a theater downtown that's like the old Cinerama theater, and so we watched it there, and it held up. It's still a good movie, despite being 50 years old.
You know, I think it doesn't hold up.
There's some parts aren't as good, but
No, the book. The book is horrible. Read the book.
I was about to say, if I remember correctly, the guy that wrote the book says he regrets writing it because it's been responsible for the deaths of like millions of sharks.
Right.
Yeah.
There's that too. But also the book is just really slow and boring.
I could see that. Yeah. I wouldn't put too much onus on the author. I imagine Spielberg's probably the one who like showed it to the wider audience, but boy, there's a lot of blood in that kid at the beginning of the movie, but but it's a good time.
One of those blood boys we've been hearing about.
The rest of my weekend I'll talk about on the grind. So
cool. Good. How about you, Moxie?
Yeah, so this weekend was the Jazz Festival, DC Jazz Fest.
Okay.
So, you know, huge event, tons of famous jazz people. Not gonna lie, I'm not that into jazz, so I didn't know who almost any of them were, but it was pretty entertaining just like being places and someone would be like, dude, that person that just went in, that's like, I know, Sugar Bone.
It's back.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Like, I feel like all jazz people have like super awesome names. But yeah, the one highlight for me is I did get to hear Sunrise Orchestra or however that's pronounced, which was pretty sweet. That's been on my bucket list for a while. So.
Okay, cool. What kind of music are Sunrise Orchestra?
So that's it's like avant-garde jazz. Sun Ra was one of the like people for Afrofuturism.
Okay, Sun Ra. Sorry, I didn't put those together. Yeah,
I heard that as well. Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. Just hang out, listening to some awesome music.
Awesome. Sounds like a good time. Yeah, I didn't do an awful lot with my week off. I finally built this.
Nice. So
you all can see. It's the Lego piranha plant, the Mario enemy. I bought it like on Amazon a while back, and I was like, it's been sitting in the box for like more than a year now. At least that's what it feels like. So I finally put that together. That was a fun build for a couple of hours, and I've got it sitting right here. I held that up. That was mostly a visual bit because I wanted y'all to see it. But it's a neat little.
You should have come from the corner home.
It needs to be closer. The other thing I've been doing, so by the time people hear this, all of the level will have been moved over to the Patreon, not behind a paywall or anything. We're just putting all of our audio hosting on Patreon because it'll save us money and make it easier to like search for shit too. So that has been a process. I'm doing the shows that are going right now. The problem is you have to touch every single episode you bring over in order to like title it right. So it has the level, and then you also have to put in the episode numbers and stuff. So been a task, and the level is of the shows that are currently running, the one with the least number of episodes for me to touch. outside of Best Quality Vacuum or something like that. So, you know, I got done with like 500. I'm combining the Don't Tree Riddle ones into that. It'll just be at the beginning, those 50 or so episodes. But yeah, the goal is to do everything, and it's thousands and thousands of episodes to touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that'll take you a minute.
It will, but you know, you stretch it out over a bunch of over several days. It'll just be a process, and hopefully everything will be like easier and cooler at the end for everybody. So that's been my big thing over the past week. That was a really quick banter for all of us, and for it having not been, it having been 2 weeks or so since we talked.
Dennis must be the long-winded one, I guess, or have a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah. I need to check the relative lengths of the segments and see who contributes the most to which segments being the longest. Mm. Not for any reason other than to guilt people.
You don't need to give yourself any more long projects. You already have quite enough of that.
Yes.
It would be interesting to see, like, what is the hypothetical setup for longest and shortest episodes?
Oh, right. So if we could sub in somebody for the grind and somebody for the end boss and just maximize it and just, like, scientifically and artificially engineer a 5-hour long episode of the show. Right.
I mean, shortest would definitely be me for the end boss, because like half the time I don't have one.
True. So. Okay, we've got part of the roster. We need to talk about video games, and to do that, we have to do the regular kind of show with grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The grind,
where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I'm realizing how much I gesture when I talk. I do this even when the camera isn't on us. Not to keep talking about the fact that we see each other now, but anyway, I'll be self-conscious about that. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will throw it to you.
Sure. So one of the things that I continue to play is Danganronpa, the first one. I'm continuing to play that. I don't have a whole lot to say at this point. I'm at the very beginning of chapter 5 at this point, and it continues to amaze me how much I remember and how much I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Like, it continues to do that. But like during the class trial for chapter 4, it said, "Congratulations, you're halfway through the game." But I'm like, wait, isn't this only like 5 chapters and an epilogue?
The last bit is really long.
Okay.
Because you break your, I don't know. It's a 15-year-old game. The murder game kind of breaks. Yeah.
That's right. Like I just don't remember like how long that whole section was, but apparently it's really long if this is only halfway through the game. So
I vaguely remember which characters die in the first one and which order. That's about it.
Gotcha. Like it's weird. Like I end up like remembering some of who dies and like in what order that happens. Sometimes certain aspects of that whole thing, but then there's other large swaths of things that I don't remember at all. And I'm like, okay, I don't know. How did this happen? I have no idea. Don't even ask me.
Right. So do you ever get to murder anyone?
I mean, when you find somebody guilty, you kill them at the expense of everybody else continuing to live.
Well, but that's just justice.
Quickly spiraling outside of video games now.
Right.
No, I'm joking. What I mean is, like, theoretically, you're all supposed to be like being motivated to kill people. Like, is there ever an option for you to just like off someone to keep the game rolling?
No, you're always playing somebody too upright to do that.
Right. Yeah. Because you're like the shining hope or whatever that has to fight against the despair. Well, anyway, so like the whole kind of point is like whenever I get to the end of this installment again, whenever I finish one again, I'm not going to go and play 2 and 3 right away, because like as much as that would make sense, I've already played Ultra Despair Girls and Ultimate Summer Camp. And now so I'm on Danganronpa 1 again. So
you're,
like,
yeah, you're immersed still.
This is still like, this is the third game of the fucking series I'm playing at this time. Row. So like in a row. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not going to keep going. I'm going to take a break. Probably not. So, yeah, I don't think you guys have any questions about this game that I've already played and talked about before.
Not at the moment.
No. Okay. Well, anyway, the next thing.
Meta question. What? Okay. What keeps bringing you back? Is it like an abusive relationship sort of thing where it's like the game can change, I can fix it?
Oh, hell no. So it's weird. The characters themselves are annoying because like they're all dialed up to like 11 or 12 out of 10. But the twists and turns to the plot is usually like the stuff that I really enjoy about it. You know, that part is cool, you know, to see what happens in that. But like the overarching story irritates me. A lot of the characters can really grate on my nerves as well. So like it's definitely not those elements. But like, I've always been a fan of detective stuff. So yeah, anything murder mystery or whatever, like all of that stuff is going to be like right up my alley.
It does gimmicky twists really, really well.
Yes, yeah, it does.
That reminds me of like Christopher Nolan movies where it's like great moments, but overall just
real shaky. Yeah.
Well, and the thing about it too, for me is just like, I really enjoy the stuff that I enjoy in this thing, and the stuff that's around it, it might irritate the crap out of me, but like over time I've been so immersed in enough Spike Chunsoft games that like, I don't have the strong reactions I used to. Like, I'm going back to Danganronpa expecting to hate everything. No, hasn't happened. Yeah. I'm just like, yep, it's a Danganronpa game. Like, you know, I've right. gotten used to it. I've become immune.
So, like, Danganronpa was the original table flipping game, right?
One
of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't the table flipping. I think I said at the very end, when I got to the ending, I was so mad about the ending. I was so mad. Oh, and you know, part of the reason why I was mad at the ending is it went too long.
Yes.
I remember now. Yeah. And I'm remembering all the trauma. It's coming back. But anyway, yeah. Then I was like, I'm going to throw my Vita. I got so mad I was going to throw my Vita. I didn't, but I wanted to. And that's when it started.
Yeah.
I think the first time I flipped a table was not about Danganronpa. I think it was about...
Might have been VLR. Might have been Virtue's Last Reward. Yeah.
Because I love 999. It wasn't that one.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Yeah. But like... You played the first one and were like super irritated with it, and you like grew to like the tone more as you played the series. So now you're circled all the way back around and playing the first one again, knowing what's up, I guess.
Right.
Is that right?
Well, not only that, but like during the interim between Danganronpa 3 and now, there's also been several other games by Spike Chunsoft, some of which I didn't know were Spike Chunsoft games until like later on.
Ooh,
like,
AI, the Somnium Files.
I don't follow development of anything, so yeah, I don't know. I don't pay attention to any kind of news. You're telling me news? I have to go Google it every week. I don't know a story. Which, spoiler, I don't have a story this time.
Okay. I'll probably still ask you.
Right. Just to troll me. But anyway, so yeah, I've had several other games in the interim that has just, because those are all of the same kind of tone in a lot of ways as Danganronpa, with some exceptions, like I think it's the World's End Club, that one with the little kids.
Same people, but yes, different but tone.
Totally different tone. And I like that game a lot too. So anyway, enough about that one. I've got others.
Okay.
So the next thing I want to talk about is actually Alterium Shift. So Alterium Shift, some of their team went to PAX West, and they were there all weekend doing promo for the game and everything, of course. But as part of a thing to kind of include the community members who could not go to PAX West, they also did this random, like spontaneously on Sunday, ARG like D&D light thing in their Discord server. So we got to interact with a character from the video game who was in there, you know, with the narrator, and had this whole scenario of stuff happen that is partially related to some of the actual stuff that happens in Alterium Shift, the video game. Yeah. So I was there, I was meal prepping, and then I was also playing through this ARG thing. Oh. And it was real cool.
That was cool of them to include people who could not make it to Texas.
Well, no, not to Texas. This is not South. This is West.
So. Oh, shit. Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Yeah.
People who couldn't get to where they were going.
Right.
To where they were holding it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Alterium Shift, this is the PlayStation throwback RPG with multiple protagonists. If people don't recognize it by name.
Yeah. Right. And a lot of like time shifts and stuff like that that has, you know, like world shifting stuff. And like the devs have a save system thing where basically you can sacrifice some of your save data to power up like a different save that's currently going. And you know, so like there's a lot of different mechanics and things that sound interesting about this. And there's a demo, it's in early access, you can actually go through and play it now. They have also released as part of their PAX West thing a beta of a whole overhaul of the game. The mechanics are totally different, you know, battle mechanics are totally different. The world is different. The sprites are different. Some of them, there's a lot more fleshed out. There's like a whole overhaul that's been in the works, like the fishing mini game and some other mini game. And I don't know, some other crap, has all been overhauled as well. And it's like, okay, they've done quite a lot of work. It's not like pushed to everyone yet though. But there is like a message on Steam about that. So I'm going to be going through and pulling that beta and messing around with that as soon as I can.
Oh,
but
cool.
I did get to do that ARG thing and it was cool. And I just wanted to let people know about that. So the Dratsy Games is the dev team. Like their Discord server is a good place to just pop in because they do stuff like that. And it's neat.
Nice.
That's very cool. So any questions about Alterium Shift, the little fun ARG side thing they did?
That looks really cool.
Yeah.
So the next thing I've been playing is Cyclopean, The Great Abyss. I resumed streaming video games last week. And so one of those streams was Cyclopean. And what's funny is that it was a month since the last time I played. So there have been a lot of versions since then that have come out of the game. Like, you know, patches have been made and everything. As a result, my save data from a month ago didn't work because it wasn't on the current version.
Oh, no.
And I could have gone through the beta place, like the same place that you would get the beta for Alterium Shift. I could have gotten that for getting back to the version that my save data was from. But instead, I just scrapped it and did a whole fresh game.
Okay.
And I am getting better at the game,
okay,
believe it or not, from dying on a door without even realizing what was going on to, like, I don't have to make another character because my first character that I rolled is still alive and I'm still playing this character. And anyway, this last time I was very excited because the dev himself, Michael K. Schmidt, showed up in the chat.
That's always fun.
Yeah. And so he gave like some tips and, you know, answered some questions and also was just enjoying watching me be completely chaotic as I usually am as I play a video game. So, you know, there's that. But anyway, so that was very cool of him. Also, in the game where I've left off, I found a ship and I am not skilled enough to actually use the ship, but I can actually use this ship to sail across the Great Abyss, which is the whole point of the game, is to get to the other side of the Great Abyss. So, I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'm not skilled enough to use it though. So now I have to go run around and, level up and survive a little longer. So, we'll see how that goes. I will say, my character's name is Alfred, and this is of any importance because Dog Nozzle, friend of everybody, Dog Nozzle, was in there. And
friend to all.
Yes. So Dog Nozzle was in there when I was playing this character, and he's like, your name is Alf, and you are allied with cats. this is a hard thing. And so anyway, it was this whole thing. And
okay. Yes, okay.
You're
luring them in with a false sense of security so you can secure that delicious, nutritious cat protein.
I've currently got 3 cats in the game, by the way. And okay. So the cats restore your wits in the middle of all the unspeakable horrors that you come across. So,
yeah. Lines up with my experience. I think I made that same joke the first time you mentioned that.
Right. But like, I didn't know this before though, but you can actually ally yourself with more than one kind of critter, but I have no idea how to make a second alliance or anything, because you roll out the gate with potentially one alliance. So not everybody who, you know, like not all the characters that you start with have an alliance, but they can. So anyway, I found that out and I don't know how to get that going, but that would be very cool to be able to have like these massive demonic eldritch horrors on my team along with cats.
What kind of classes do they have in the game?
There aren't classes. You're just an English guy. And so there's not a class, but like you have your, I rolled through all the stats and stuff last time, but you have like strength, wit, or strength, skill, and mind. And so your mind is your wits, which is the meter that will go down whenever you come across horrors. So like, I think your mind is your general resistance to the horrors that you keep coming across. Your skill level is your ability to use any kind of armor, weapon, item, whatever. And then, you know, your strength is pretty obvious. That's your ability to wield weapons and sometimes wear some of the armor and things like that. So you can kind of craft your character however you want, but there's not like, oh, I carry a sword and I X. Like you pick up whatever and you're using whatever because you're just an English guy.
Yeah.
So
it looks cool.
Yeah it is really cool. And I wanted to say as well that I found out the dev is working on Cyclopean 2.
It looks really good.
Yes, it does. Yeah. It does. And this is the continuation. So like after you're done with the Great Abyss, you've gotten out of the Abyss. You're out of the lower Dreamlands, but there's still more Dreamlands out there. So that's what the second game is the second part.
And it's no longer monochrome, but has kind of like I would almost call it like a Windows 3.1
kind of
color palette to it. It's still restricted, but like it is the kind of cyan and tan that you might associate with games from roughly that era. Yeah.
So is there a reason you can't just wake up?
You can't wake up from the dreamland.
You've gone down the stairs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, from what I recall in like standard in the novels, if you die, you simply wake up. And like you can't go back, but
that would just like completely obviate any need for this game to exist.
So I mean, it still makes it into a game over because like you can't go back.
Right.
That's true. I was just curious if there was like
a way to wake up. But guess what? I'm hoping that the dev comes back to my stream the next time I stream it because I have not read the manual and I'm not going to read the manual until probably after I'm done playing the game because I just don't have time.
You don't want the manual to spoil you. Yeah.
Well, I don't think the manual would, but you know, at the same time,
the perfect playtester.
Yeah, I know exactly. I'm not going to read it. I'm Chris Redfield. I don't read.
I don't want to read. I don't want to see the beginning or end of any sentences.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, that's really cool. So, any questions about Cyclopean? I continue to really enjoy it. It's fantastic.
Continues to look rad.
It is. It is. So the next thing on my list, and this is the last one, Trine 5, Clockwork Conspiracy. So this is a 2023 platform puzzle game by Frozen Byte, published by THQ Nordic. You made a noise.
Oh, the noise that I made was me wondering how long the series has been
around?
In development.
Oh.
Not in development, or just like, it feels like this has been around like since like early Humble days, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
I think that's that they're still accurate.
That it they're still accurate, going,
Yeah. Well, like Trine 4, which was like not the good game. Like Trine 4, though, it is 2.5D, and it's playable like all the rest of the series, either single player or co-op. And I should note, since we're talking about the longevity of the series, the first game originally was only single player. They went back to that game after they made Trine 2, and it was such a big success because all the players wanted the first game to be co-op as well.
Yeah, they went back like and a Lost Viking things.
Yeah, but they went back there and they made that also co-op, where you could play that co-op as well.
Yeah, because the idea was like, oh, these three people found an artifact that merged them into one body and only one could take control at a time, right?
It wasn't that they merged into one body. It's just that they can switch each other, like switch out from wherever the heck they were before.
Gotcha. Okay.
And they switch out. Like on the screen, how that plays out is it's one person and that person can talk between. Right. But that's how they avoid death, is because they can switch different characters in and out and not like part of the canon. So, but anyway, in this one, you are controlling the three characters, Amadeus, Zoya, and Pontius, who are a wizard, a thief, and a knight, respectively. And this iterates upon all the prior versions, of course. So that means there's also like cameos from characters from earlier in the series, as well as Nine Parchments, which was another co-op game that they made that's in the same Trineverse, I guess. So anyway, in this one, Amadeus can reverse gravity, Zoya has ricochet arrows, and Pontius uses a throwing sword, which can create like another anchor point for some of these puzzles. So they all have a bunch of new mechanics because they added, you know, they've continually added to your skill set, of course.
So like it used to be like the wizard could create boxes.
He can still make boxes and planks, but he also at some point along the series began to have offensive capabilities. Where he didn't before, originally he could only just trap a critter in a box, and that was the only thing he could do. He couldn't kill them. Over time it's iterated. Everything is kind of morphed as it goes. But this gameplay focuses more on the puzzles than the platforming. Although I will say that this game also is now having boss fights that are multi-phase.
Uh-oh.
Which for a puzzle platformer is a real weird experience, but the places that you're fighting critters, like your big boss characters, are really definitely like arenas. You know, like they're small arenas, but they're still arenas, boss arenas, and like they have definite super video gamey kinds of forms. It's real obvious that they're kind of cribbing off of the long history of video games and not trying to do anything unique anymore. Like, because it felt like, especially in Trine 2, that one was like the best one of them, that that game had a lot more creativity when it came to the bosses and how you came across them and everything. And now it's like, oh, it's a video game arena with a video game boss.
Right.
So two questions. Has the mage learned to cast fireball yet?
No, not that I can see.
That is unfortunate. And
that's why his wife is constantly leaving him in the story.
Well, I was about to say, have his kids grown up yet?
His kids still exist. They're in this. They play a part in this, although like his wife actually did leave him and take all the kids. And so he's like alone and he's like in this fancy resort when you first see him in the beginning of this game. And he's just like, oh, Margaret, you know,
that's actually kind of depressing, especially because he seems like a good dad.
He seems like a good. Okay, whatever. Okay.
I had a question about the mechanics. Are you playing single player or multiplayer right now?
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not mention that. I was streaming it with Dave, so Dave and I were co-oping it. Mm. So,
is it like you switch between characters if there's like a third person whose ability you need, or?
Yeah, like you can switch between characters. You can have multi-person co-op and have like three people play, actually.
Okay.
So that way you can fill all the slots and each character is represented. But there's two different options in the menu. You can either have it where the two people have to fight over who gets to be what character. And then there's also another option in there where you can change it where anybody can be anybody.
How do you fight over a character?
Basically, like, you'll be like, I want to play Zoya or whatever, you know, right. And then have to have a little dispute with whoever if they don't want to give up that character.
Okay.
So like if you have three people, somebody's not going to want to be Pontius, you know, or whatever, that, depending on your particular mix of people you play games with. But in my experience is nobody wanted to be Pontius. So
is that the hook person or
the Pontius is the knight.
So
yeah, actually between Dave and I usually play Amadeus, and then Dave likes to play Pontius. He's the first person that I've met that likes to play the knight guy. Anyhow, it's been fun. We will continue playing this game when we can, but like since we're just now getting back to regular life and adapting to a new normal and grieving actively and things like that, you know, all the schedules will still be kind of whatever for a while until we can just settle. You know, it'll be some time. So
you gotta prioritize yourselves in this situation. Yeah,
right. Well, I mean, like, and then the thing too is that you have to have the ability to focus on puzzles and do puzzly type things. And, you know, especially if it's something like this, I will say about Trine 5, the puzzles are a lot more complicated than some of the earlier puzzles were, because again, they've been making these puzzles for so many games now.
And,
so
and there are more doohickeys, more
verbs,
you have.
Yeah, yeah. More verbs. So, as a result, it's like, you know, we got stuck on a puzzle the last time we played. And then Dave's like, I was like, hey, Dave, do you want to stream Trine 5 next week? I don't know. I don't think so. We got stuck on a puzzle. Once we get past that puzzle, I'm sure he'll be like, okay. No. Anyway, like the story is just more silly story. At this point, like there are people wanting to overthrow the kingdom and they want to basically frame the heroes of the Trine as bad guys. And that's what the whole kind of setup is. And like the big bad is stealing magical power from wizards and then putting them in his automatons, which are now guarding in place of all the knights and stuff, you know, all the castle and everything. So,
okay.
So, yeah. So,
quickly, without going into a whole lot of detail, because I don't know how much memory you have for it. What made Trine 4 so bad and how does this fix that?
Oh, it's real easy. So, Trine 4 wasn't fucking finished. It just fucking stopped. And then they just never went back and did it. I don't know what happened. I don't know why they stopped, but, it wasn't done. The story just stops. That's why it was bad. It wasn't the puzzles and stuff. Now, when it comes to mechanical stuff, I will say that Trine 3 is my least one favorite in terms of mechanics, because that one, they went full 3D and that was not a good decision. So that's why they went back to 2.5D and they stayed there. So,
Yeah. Cool. That was the only question that I think I had.
Yeah. It was just like, man, that game wasn't finished.
Yeah. Also, the first Trine came out in 2009, so I was kind of right.
2009 is a while ago.
Wow. Good on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. About all you have?
You don't want to stop.
Only like six or seven games.
God, that was already so many. No, that's enough.
Who has something new? Okay, I will go. I will not go into too much detail about it because I don't know how much there is to say, but I did guest on, a podcast, that is friendly with the network, Metal Gear Mondays, with our buddies, Alessio, and Lily. Oh God, I never forget the third guy. Shit.
Fix it in post.
Oops.
Yeah, fix it in post.
Sorry. I was on there to talk about Metal Gear Solid Delta, which is a surprisingly faithful remake of Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater.
Wait, so the 3
is now Delta.
Is now Delta.
Which is a triangle symbol, so it kind of makes sense.
True, kind of makes sense. Yeah, you know, Gamma would be more appropriate, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And when I say it's shockingly faithful. Like, there are quality of life, you know, kind of things you can turn on or allow them to have, like kind of a more modern, like Metal Gear Solid 5 style control scheme. But there are also options to kind of just make it just play like Metal Gear Solid 3 did back at launch. Mm-hmm. So like, I will entertain questions about it, but like, for big details for the listener, go listen to them. Like, we talked about the opening, the virtuous mission up to when the boss betrays you.
So supposing you really liked Metal Gear Solid, the first half of Metal Gear Solid 5 or whatever, is this a game you're likely to like?
I would say, yeah, now because it plays, like, the thing that was keeping you from really, I think, really enjoying how Metal Gear Solid Delta or Metal Gear Solid 3 would play is like the controls. For a while, it was hard to get a hold of a good version of it. Mm-hmm. There was like a subsistence version that gave it like a 3D camera as opposed to the overhead camera. I think, does make it feel better in your hands. That said, like, the level geometry isn't changed. So like, if the thing that you liked about Metal Gear Solid 5, which was the best thing about Metal Gear Solid 5, was the stealthily dismantling a base.
Yeah.
You know,
that was,
kind of thing.
Yeah, that was definitely it.
This is more separated into like individual rooms, you know, like in Metal Gear Solid 1 or 2, except they've got jungle paint.
instead
of tanker paint or what have you. But it is still, you know, really good stealth gameplay with a lot of like unexpected things kind of simulated to it. So I don't know if it's worth the $70 or whatever you would pay to get it now.
Oh,
it's a full pricer. I don't know. It'll probably go on sale pretty soon and might be good then too. You know, like, it's a new coat of paint on what is already a really just kind of like good and well-regarded game. That's a really fun spy story.
My main question was, you said it was a faithful adaptation, but is it like a lazy adaptation where it's like the same game and they just update textures, or did they like overhaul it like the Resident Evil games?
So the answer to that question is going to vary depending on definitions of lazy. It is not a Resident Evil style overhaul where it is a different game that is based on the bones, story, and expectations of the original. Like, it does end up playing a lot like a reskin of Metal Gear Solid 3. I was expecting more. That was primarily because I was not watching the news about it for that expectation to be set. So don't come into this expecting a brand new game with that. Whether or not it's lazy, your call. Depends on how long it's been since you played the original, right?
That's about what I expected it to be, or maybe, I don't know, somewhere around there.
You know what? I think taking a dim view, like having low expectations for Konami, is probably a good starting point.
I think I've been away from there long enough. It's been a decade now.
Yeah. Grudges can last forever. A grudge can outlive you.
I've got to say, I'd love the title, though, Metal Gear Mondays. Like, just the image of Snake being like, I hate Mondays.
They've been going for a while. I was on there to talk about this exact same segment of the game 10 years and one gender ago. So that was fun.
Well, and then the original came out, what, about 20 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, right? That was a 2004 game. I was a junior in high school. We were juniors in high school when that came out. No other questions? Oh, good.
I was gonna say, I suppose on the bright side, if it's just like a, you know, bones to bone, like, remake of the game, or like maybe a reskinning of it. I mean, the original game's great. So, you know,
that's the thing, right? Like, I don't know. I wouldn't want them to mess with the story that much if a lot of the original people weren't involved. More of the original people are involved than you think, though, based on interviews and stuff like that. Obviously, Kojima's not around because Kojima's doing his own thing, going to Saudi Arabia and talking about how great AI is.
Oh,
fucking. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I missed that news story.
Yeah. So a couple of notes I have for him there.
So what is there's the only shot I've seen of this game is apparently like Snake gets a fursuit or whatever, like an alligator fursuit.
That's a scale suit. No, that's like a goofy costume you can get. I think maybe it was a pre-order or something, but you can dress yourself up like a crocodile mascot, and that plays interesting. There are interesting ways that the camouflage system plays with that. I think you can really freak enemy soldiers out by, you know, being up to your neck in the crocodile outfit.
That's
probably freak out crocodiles too.
Yeah, probably. Or arouse them.
Different kind of freak.
Any other questions about Metal Gear Delta?
No.
Okay. The other thing I've been playing is I streamed this past weekend about halfway through a new survival horror game called Heartworm. This has been in development for a long time. I think a demo was included in either the first Dread X collection or in the first Haunted PS1 demo disc that came out. And that should give you an idea of what kind of game this is. It's a throwback to PS1 style visuals, classic survival horror kind of gameplay. This is like a Western Silent Hill-ish version of Fatal Frame, kind of. You're playing as a young woman who is obsessed with mortality, who's following up on this urban legend about an abandoned mansion that apparently has a room where you can go into it and then cross over to the other side. And you end up kind of in spaces that are reminiscent of her own past and people who she has lost. It's neat. There are some frustrations that I have with it. The opening of it is, oh my God, so slow.
It's a visual novel.
Yeah. You're kind of walking around this abandoned house and reading, memos and poems. The content of them is good. There's just not a lot of incidents between them. Then you cross over and you start running into enemies. There's good variety to them. And the first one, they are copies of you who are made up entirely of static, some of which have different abilities, you know, move at different speeds and stuff like that. And all of the combat is through your camera. So you're, you know, it's basically just a gun, but it's a different metaphor kind of on top of it.
Still shoots. Yeah.
Yes. You're aiming it, you know, kind of like in third person. You're not being graded on composition, at least as far as I can tell. Right. you know, if you try to do a rule of thirds with it, it'll be considered a missed shot, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Pokemon Snap. At least the original one didn't let you, like, you got dinged for having good image composition. It wanted the subject square in the middle and taking up most of the frame. Mm-hmm. You know, this is kind of similar deal. I've moved on to the second world in it. I think there are like four of them, and it's a whole different set of enemies and kind of a different construction. It's a little bit more mist-like, which is fun when I realized what was going on.
Is it still like another thing that's influenced from the main character's past or something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like the first one is your childhood, and this one is more about like her memories with her grandpa.
Okay.
Is what it seems to be. Yeah.
Sounds like maybe like a Silent Hill room sort of approach, I guess, like different areas that you go to.
Yep. So that's what I have right now. I haven't finished it. It's neat, with the caveat that opening is real slow.
I know. I popped in later and I'm like, huh, stuff is happening. What do you know?
Good. Sorry, this is only semi on topic.
Okay.
A game I was thinking of suggesting. Have you seen Shark Dentist?
No.
It is a game that is exactly what it expects. You are a dentist in a creepy like shack who is performing back alley like dental surgery on giant sharks.
Okay.
And the whole thing is you have to keep them calm but not run out of anesthetic, because if they either freak out or the anesthetic wears off, they will eat you.
Okay.
Hey, okay. Guess what? Bad press for sharks.
Again, kind of a theme. Take notice, sharks. I wish listed it. It's not out yet, although you can request access to a playtest. Wow, that is a lady straight up getting chomped torso style by a shark.
Yep.
Huh. Neat.
Just love a game that gives you exactly what it advertises.
Yes. Every question is answered by the title.
Indeed.
Yeah. The only other thing that I've been doing, and this is why I don't have an awful lot more, Ben, you talking about that Voxelgram game last week.
Uh-oh.
made me pick up Switch Picross games again.
Oh, okay.
So I've been playing through literally just because last week was a bad depression week and I just needed to scratch that itch on my brain. So I just kind of disappeared into that and also fucked around with some of the on Switch. That developer Jupiter had done one that is all Sega sprites and a more recent one that is all Namco sprites. It's effectively the same gameplay, it just has different music and you're doing different images, but yeah, just a shitload of Picross.
Sometimes it's good just go into the dopamine factory for a little bit, you know?
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
There is nothing wrong with hopping on the dungeon train, even if the dungeon train is incredibly simple logic puzzles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all I got.
Cool.
Ben,
I'll go.
You're pointing at your face.
Because I have some new stuff, but none of it's video games. So
okay. All right.
Loose fit. Over the weekend, I went to PAX West, what was mentioned before.
Oh, shit. Yeah,
you are. I didn't realize. I could have sent you to the Ulterior Shift booth to get me a pin.
when you brought it up, I was trying to rack my brain. There were I think I saw the stand. There were two different ones. There was one that had people dressed up outside of it and were aggressive cosplaying, but I think it was the other one, though. The one that was more in the indie game section. Yeah. But I got a day pass from work, so that was sweet. And I went with one of my friends, and I had gone last year under the same circumstances. And so largely it was 80% the same show, just a little bit had been subbed out. Some of the old stuff gone, some of the new stuff there. I think maybe the big attractions that we saw a lot of people around is they had a Nintendo booth and that had a bunch of demos, but it had Silksong playable there. So a lot of people shouted around that.
If you didn't want to wait until tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah. I think there are other games that you can still play outside of the convention, but they had Hades 2 and stuff like that. Some of the more noteworthy IRL events you could do. The one that was very kind of immature and I rolled my eyes at was there was a Borderlands 4 rage room where you could get up in a suit and go and break plates in a room, which is okay, whatever, if people want to do that. But the thing that was annoying is you could hear it anywhere in the convention space when somebody entered.
Oh, that's obnoxious. Stuff. Yeah, I know.
So it's all right.
Yeah. I've got no problem with a rage room. That seems fun, actually. But a Borderlands one immediately, adding Borderlands to anything immediately pisses me off.
Yeah. And the fact that they didn't have insulation around it is we're going to let everybody know we're here sort of thing. It's just could you not? But, anyway, that was a bad one. A good one was there was one for Buckshot Roulette where you could play IRL.
That sounds so cool.
And there was I'll put a photo in the backstage, but there was a four-person table as well. And they had the actual props of the cell phones, the handcuffs and stuff like that. And so you could do that. So that looked really sweet. I didn't do it, but now I'm describing it, I'm regretting not doing it.
Take a video of it. Let us know.
Yeah.
Go back there.
But that was sick. And that one was hidden away almost in a tent. You could only get a weird side angle into it. But
sweet.
That was A+ for inventiveness on that. And then outside of that, it was largely the same sort of thing, just a bunch of video game stands. Baldur's Gate still had a sick ass big stand with the alien ship and the castle and looked beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then the other part was board games is usually what I'm really interested in. That's more of like a secondary feature for PAX. So I don't expect a whole a lot out of it. But I had a good time this time. The library was actually pretty good. There were some games that I hadn't seen before. And I got to play test a game with the person I went with. And he ended up buying it. But it was like kind of a mini, either two-player or four-player game. But it was like kind of like a deck drafting, like pretty small, like... it's like a 3x3 square grid, and you play cards like on these grids, and you try and attack their like fort or whatever. But it's like a quick, like 30-minute deck builder, sort of like magic-y type fighting game.
Oh, cool.
The name of it is like, I'm not even going to remember the name. It's like, it's almost like Duncan. It's like a, it's like written the Dunnack or something like that. It's written the same way upside down as it is right side up. I don't even care enough to look it up because it's, I wasn't a fan of like how they were trying to push it on you at their actual stand. But, anyway, whatever. The game was not bad. So that's PAX West. Largely a good experience. I don't know how people do a 4-day thing at that because it's like I was people saturated and game saturated by half a day. And
there's so many people there.
Yeah.
That's why they invented alcohol.
Yeah, I think, yeah, maybe, I don't know. I feel like maybe, depending on what you're going for, maybe, like, if you're doing the cosplay, I could see it being more fun. And, like, if you're doing it for the social aspect, then I could see it being more fun. But I think I'm at a stage in my life where I want to be in small groups of people. And so,
yeah.
But it was still good. I'm happy I went.
You see any cool cosplay that stuck out to you?
There were some that was cool, but I didn't know where they were from. I think they were like the guards maybe in Final Fantasy VII, but I haven't played the either version, so I don't know.
Were they in like blue kind of military outfits and had like three goggle?
Yes.
Things?
Yeah, yeah. The three red eyes kind of. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Shinra soldiers. Yeah.
There was a pyramid head that was pretty sick. Cool. What the pyramid, the head was next to them because I guess they were too hot and like sweaty.
I'm on break.
You know, don't meet your heroes, I guess. all right. So outside of PAX, there's one other thing I wanted to talk about that was new for me, but it was also at PAX too. So it's kind of related. The one game that I have is a board game, and it's called The Fate of the Fellowship, and it is a new Lord of the Rings board game that I played with some of my gaming friends back from Austin online, but it was a really good experience, so I kind of want to share it in case people are interested in this, but
okay,
it's a multiplayer co-op game that is sort of like a simulation of Lord of the Rings, the trilogy. And the idea is everybody plays as two characters. And I think you can set it up where if you're a designated pair or if you're just like a random two of all the characters that they have. And you basically play on a map that is a map of the Lord of the Rings universe. So it's like Mount Doom is on one corner of it. The Shire is on another corner of it and everything in between.
This little cardboard model of Sauron's tower is really neat.
Yeah. We played it on Board Game Arena, so I haven't seen the one-to-one like physical depiction of it, but I can imagine it's probably pretty sick. So the idea is it plays kind of like Pandemic, if people are familiar with that sort of game. So everybody goes around and takes turns doing their turn. And on your turn, you do five actions. You do one, you pick which character wants to be your primary character, the two that you control. And so you do four actions with your primary one, and you do one secondary with your secondary one. And so most of the actions are like moving around the map. It could be like gaining soldiers of a certain variety, and it depends on which character you have. So it's like if you're Legolas, you might get an elf soldier like drafted to your space, whereas if you're Gimli, you might get a dwarf soldier. And then they all have like special abilities that they can do where that are kind of like go in line with their characters. So it's like Aragorn does something that helps buff Frodo if you happen to be on the same space with him. And so the game itself, you have like four objectives in the base game where it's like different thematic things that actually happen in the movie, where it's like send this many soldiers out front of Saruman's castle and like have them all be there at once to pass this objective. Or I think it's like you need to go to Rivendell and give somebody like a heart resource because there's like different resources you can collect, like rings, hearts, and other things. So it's like the objectives kind of coincide with like things in the movie. And then the final objective is cast the ring into the volcano at Mount Doom. And you have to have all the other objectives complete before you can do that. And so similar to like Pandemic, the idea is you're kind of coordinating with one another, like, okay, if I move my character here, can you get here? And can we do this, you know, like on your turn, like that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then in between everybody's turns, like events will come out of like the evil deck, which will like either draft bad guy soldiers and orcs in different places, or make you choose to like sacrifice something, something negative that will happen in between each person's turn.
The evil jar.
Crisis alert.
Yeah. I think one of the cards is called The Skies Darken. So it's very Lord of the Rings dramatic, but so a game of this probably takes like 1 or 2 hours, depending upon how like proficient people are. But yeah, we had a lot of fun with it. The game that we ended up winning, we played one and lost like maybe half an hour into it. And then the second one we played, we won on the easiest difficulty in like the base game settings. But for us, it was a lot of fun because like reenacting a lot of things that were similar to like things that happened in the movie, like killed a whole bunch of the flying sky. There was it the ring,
the Nazguls.
Yes. Killed a bunch of them outside of Rivendell with the Liv Tyler character, who you can tell how much of a Lord of the Rings fan I am by this conversation. glancing knowledge of the lore. So we had a lot of fun playing that. It's probably going to enter our game rotation, but especially for people who like co-op games, I feel like good ones are kind of few and far between. So for anyone who's interested in that, this is like a pretty good way to go.
Yeah. I was about to say something about, it would ruin a gift idea. Yeah. This sounds cool. So like, I guess my only question about this would be like, how tolerant is it of approaches that are not represented in the story of the books or the movie, right? Like,
I definitely think you can. It's like, I emphasize the parts where it, you know, you did have circumstances that happened to line up with the movie, but I do feel like those are largely like random occurrences, because it's like, you know, the Eye of Sauron is like a token that kind of bounces around the map, and like the Nazguls are kind of go around the map too, then kind of go towards Frodo. But it's like, just by virtue of the fact of the map layout, like you're going to have Frodo starting at the Shire and ending at Mount Doom. Like he's going to pass through all these different locations from the movie. So it's like, you're going to cross a mountain no matter what. You might cross Rivendell, but you might not. But if you don't, then you might cross Bree and go to the inn, you know? So it's like, you're bound to hit something that happened like in the trilogy. So there's bound to be something interesting happening. And perhaps if you're fans enough, if you do something alternative, then maybe that would be interesting in itself, like revisionist history sort of thing. But
okay.
Can Frodo simply decide to become the new Dark Lord?
I haven't played at the expert level or anything, but yeah, maybe there's objectives in the later ones where it takes a wild turn. But
is there a rule where you get to shoot with a gun anybody who says we just take the eagles to Mordor?
I think that's just a general rule of the Lord of the Rings fandom.
That can just be a house rule. Yeah. That can be a house rule, and it's not illegal to do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I had a good time with that. So we'll probably play it again. But I saw the physical game at PAX West, but just the box, not like the insides or anything. So
sounds rad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a fresh one too. It just came out this year. So a few months ago, I believe.
Thanks.
Yeah. And it's like out of stock in a bunch of places. Must have had like a short print run. That all you have?
That's all I got.
Cool. Moxie, round us out.
Yeah. So a couple of things, mostly small. I guess I do technically have something new. I tried a first person shooter called Sprawl. It's kind of a cyberpunk, like Quake-inspired, movement-heavy shooter.
Okay.
Emphasis on running, wall running, and stuff like that. It's very stylish and seems to have a surprising amount of storyline. Unfortunately, I only beat the first level, and I'm not sure I'm going to continue.
What's stopping you?
I think the big thing is just, I don't know, it's very fast and kinetic, but you also have very low HP, so it's
low time to death.
Yeah, and it's, if I'm playing a game that's just super fast and you're jumping all over the place, I want it to be like kind of a Doom-esque power fantasy where you're just running around, you know, beating things down and stuff like that. Or if a game is going to have super fast or time to kill, I want it to be a tactical shooter. Right. So this one feels like it's kind of neither fish nor fowl.
Right. It's not hitting either of the kind of nice overlaps you would want.
Yeah. So like I think it is probably not a bad game. But yeah, it doesn't seem for me. The one objective issue I had is when you aim down the sights, time slows down and you only have a certain amount of like adrenaline. You know, kinda like a Max Payne type of thing.
Yeah.
But I found that the activating that was not always instantly responsive, which is important because there's enemies that have like riot shields where you have to like jump over top of them, then like spin and get a headshot.
Oh, so like you do the jump and then it doesn't activate and then you're just left vulnerable.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't know. I'm probably going to go back and at least try one more time with controller because I wonder if maybe it also seemed like particularly the starting weapon you have really emphasizes headshots.
Okay.
So I don't know if maybe this is a game that's just made with auto-aim in mind.
Okay.
And maybe that's also why the controls might be a little shanky.
Ah, man, I don't know. Like, based on the video I'm looking at, like, it really seems like something that would be mouse and keyboard heavy.
Yeah, you would definitely think. But yeah, you know, it does seem like a cool idea. Like, you know, doesn't see any, I got it super on sale. So, you know, not really a bad game, but just not sure it's for me.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I've been doing is finished up the seasonal event in Fallen London.
Okay.
So ended up with we ended up going to effectively the dream dimension and raiding hell from that direction.
Okay. If you die, do you just wake up?
In this case, no, because in this case, you are overtly traveling to the well.
You're bodily traveling.
I'm actually not. Okay, so I was just going to give the snarky answer, but now that I think about it, and this being that type of game, I actually think there is bespoke death mechanics if you die in the dream dimension, and okay. I actually don't know what they are.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I was literally I was just doing a callback to Jala's game.
No. I support that. I just think it's funny because like Anisha is gonna be like, no, that's ridiculous. That's like, oh wait a minute. No, this is a game where like canonically they have, you know, weird things. Like I know if you as example, I know if you die while at sea, there's a completely different like way they resolve you coming back because you effectively like go down and meet Davy Jones.
Okay. From the monkeys?
Huh?
Literally a joke that only people who are old enough to have watched Gilligan's Island will recognize.
Oh.
Sorry. Yeah.
but yeah, so I'm not sure on that one, but yeah, Raided Hell ended up going through and fixing all of the laws that were messing up time, space, causality, and ontology.
Okay.
And rescuing the stranded POWs from the war against hell. However, then you know, the demons showed up and were like, hey, legally, we still have a right to these POWs. You can't take them.
Okay.
But luckily I had earlier climbed inside of a law furnace and found a basically the equivalent of like a law pearl, and that inadvertently created a new country inside hell in which we had diplomatic immunity.
Okay.
And so was able to use that to get out. So basically what I'm saying is that even after resolving all the time paradoxes and stuff like that, the storyline makes very little sense.
Right. I mean, as something where you're fucking with causality would lend itself to, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's, yeah, but no, it was a lot of fun. I got lots of cool rewards, and now I think I only have like a month or two left till the next event, which is
The Christmas one.
No, I think there's actually the ocean themed one. That's like where you can get upgrade ships and stuff like that, and then the Christmas themed one.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, in the meantime, I'm trying to start a railway venture is my next thing. So
railway?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm trying to start a railroad to hell.
Cool.
Through the dream dimension or physically?
No, not through the dream. Mostly not through the dream dimension this time.
Yeah. It's hard to get there because of the way the borders are drawn.
Gone.
This is a game where the more I learn about it, the less I understand.
Yeah. So when you say you get rewards, like, you know, cool rewards off of this, is this stuff that'll make other situations easier? Like, are there obvious plugs, you know, ways that it hooks into other stuff? Or is this like cosmetic or like narrative bling that you get?
Some of both. Some of it, a fair amount of it is like narrative, where, you know, there's a good chance that like some of these items or stats I've unlocked will show up in other places for like, you know, kind of variant ways to do things. And those can range from either being just straight up, like you said, just kind of a narrative thing, to in some cases, it can be like, you know, something where you would need to get some sort of expensive item in order to accomplish something, or you have the option of, if you happen to have this quality, you can just bypass that.
Mm-hmm.
However, the more directly useful thing is once you get a fair ways into the game, you start unlocking more specialized stats. So things like seafaring, which helps with seafaring.
All right.
You don't know in this game. That could be like fair seeing or something.
I think I'm following you. Yeah.
It's like there's Mithridacy, which basically helps with situations where you need to deceive someone by telling the truth.
Okay.
And, you know, just all sorts of things. And so those items are like, whereas in your primary stats, you, at the start of the game, the level cap for the primary stats are, I believe, 200, and you can eventually raise the cap to 230. The cap for these special skills, advanced skills, starts out at 5 and you can upgrade it to 7.
Okay.
And so, but then often the exclusive items will give like +1 to one of these stats. And so, you know, when 7 is the most you can get, even +1 is a lot.
Okay.
And often it ends up being, so like I end up with a piece of luggage that increases my Artisan of the Red Science, which is basically the ability to violate the laws of nature. particularly of space. And that's currently the only luggage item in the game that helps you do that.
I just don't understand how this game doesn't collapse under its own weight. I really don't. That's not derogatory. It's just
an item that defies weight. And so that way it's all good.
And a stat too.
Yeah. You know, as you do. And I mean, I think part of it is also if you make everything crazy enough, then like you wrap back around to everything working. So for example, like prominently the, you'll know the way, one of the ways I got to hell, or one of the ways that I first determined that hell was missing, was when the train to hell didn't come on time.
Okay.
Which you might note that I previously said I haven't actually made the train to hell yet. But since this is a game where they start out with the premise of like, yeah, we fucked up causality, that's not really a problem.
Yeah. Okay. Huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Taken
as read. You had Sprawl and Fall in London. Anything else?
I'm continuing on with the Division 2, mainly just like power leveling through the season pass or whatever. Nothing too noteworthy other than just it is very funny. Like I'm getting to end game where, you know, most parties I'm in are people with optimized gear, stuff like that. And okay. I've definitely reached the point where in some instances I kind of feel bad for the NPCs.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like every one of these games takes place in as close to literal hell as you could possibly get to without it being Fall of London.
True. But like I was just in a match where like one of the levels, one of the missions, most of the enemies in the mission get like dropped in via helicopter, you know, helicopters, piers, ropes drop down, that sort of thing. And basically all of them, the helicopter appears, everyone just opens fire on the helicopter. They get to the ground, someone sprays them with whatever that like riot foam is, and then just like dozens of seeker mines just like jump on them and explode.
Okay.
And so it's just, you know, it's like at least give them a fighting chance. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But
I had a question for you, Moxie, whether or not you're going to do the new No Man's Sky expansion, the Voyager.
Yes. So that one looks really cool.
Yeah. So Dennis and I both installed it, and I am hoping that the new expedition will be announced tomorrow.
Okay. All right.
Apparently, they usually announce it a week after the expansion drops, so they have time to like bug fix. Mm-hmm. And so that would be tomorrow. But yes, I'm very excited. That looks very cool.
Sounds like a segment to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Since Dennis isn't here, I will read the question. It's time to assemble an all-star party of one DPS, one support, and one tank character. But you can choose each one from any game, even ones that don't explicitly have classes. Who is on your dream team and how do they work together? Pretty complicated question, actually. So I will throw it to you, Jala. What does Threnza say?
Threnza says, damage dealer is Kirby. The pink demon is a frequent slayer of god-tier foes. Support, Mouskular Chef, Monster Hunter World, can create a wide array of buffing dishes and can keep Kirby motivated with food. And the tank, the nameless one, Planescape Torment. Immortal warrior millennia old. Just bring note cards to remind him what he's doing if he dies.
tanks don't need a lot of memory or a lot of like prompting. They just go where the hurt happens.
Right.
Yeah. Kirby. Man, so like, would Kirby be able to out DPS whoever you were fighting, given that what Kirby can do is defined by what the enemy does?
He can just suck away whatever weapon they have and become it, maybe.
Yeah, but that's like it's like a mirror fight, right?
Yeah.
I will take their weapon and use it against them. Is that the most effective thing?
I mean,
unless Kirby has a weapon from the prior enemy.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, right. There's always just the power of four.
he's just gonna turn the enemies on so much if they happen to have that particular special thing.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That was the only thing. I think Nameless One is a good answer because he cannot technically die. Although he does have to get out of the out of that first dungeon though to come back, so it leaves you pretty open.
Right.
Yeah. Moxie, what does the ugly machine say?
The ugly machine says DPS, Doom Guy, obviously. Support, Tom Nook. He can easily provide anything you need. Food, clothing, shelter, medicine, that one cute frog chair, etc. Tank Cubert. Okay. I'm not sure you can even kill him in a way that would matter. And with a face like that, everyone wants him dead. They all belong in hell.
He's also Cubert also has a potty mouth.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That endears me to people though.
True. Yeah, I wouldn't want to kill him. I want him at my side. Yeah. Good answer. Let's see, Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, Donkey Kong and his broad world-carrying shoulders as my tank. Mael from Clair Obscur as my DPS, because I like the damage dealer that spends most of the fight doing cool poses and then hits for 999999 damage out of nowhere. Support would be Parappa. In terms of how the team would work, Donkey Kong's distracting, punchable face would draw aggro, allowing Mael to time to go through her routine. Parappa would be pumping everyone up with his sick beats and also casting haste on Mael.
Yeah. Parappa raps so good that it lets you pass driving exams. He's kind of the ultimate bard when you think about it for a little bit. Yeah. Okay. No, I get it. Good one. And this is probably me, and I need to get back to the post there. Callum says, DPS, Kratos, for the obvious reasons. Support, Ico from Final Fantasy IX. White Mage with double cast. That's actually good. I like that. And Tank, Sonic, as long as he manages to get at least one ring back, he is good. The biggest issue with the team is pretty much all of the characters are insufferable and or loners and wouldn't get along. You would need a Suicide Squad dynamic for that, I think. You would need them bound in some way. Yeah. No, I would not have thought of Ico, but that's a good answer. Yeah. Let's see, Jala, what does Fran say?
Fran says DPS is Nathan Drake from Uncharted. Tank is J.J. Macfield from The Missing, J.J. Macfield and the Island of Memories. Support, Dr. Hill from Until Dawn.
I don't know how useful Peter Stormare would be as your support. He would be interesting to have around.
It's like the opposite of Parappa.
Yeah. He is one of the worst therapists in all of video games. And I only say one of because the psychologist, Dr. Kaufman from Silent Hill Shattered Memories, is actually actively worse.
Right. Right.
More antagonistic, let's say. Yeah. J.J. Macfield. I need to go back and play that. That's a puzzle platformer by the Deadly Premonition guy, where like it's kind of like Wario, where you take on different like fatal conditions in order to pass obstacles and stuff. Yeah. Moxie, round us out with Case. What Case says.
Case says, Tank, Colossus can absorb a lot of damage and can assist with mobility for DPS characters. I'm not sure which of the Colossi, though.
Colossus, I think they're literally just, they're just picking X-Men. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. I was thinking like Shadow of the Colossus.
Never yeah, mind. No, the mobility thing is alluding to fastball specials.
Oh, okay. Okay. Support Forge, buff, rebuff, and healing abilities manifesting as gadgets he's built. And DPS Kuanin, quick, agile, and able to get sneak attacks across the map. Look, I want my X-Men Legends, all right?
I think we all want some X-Men Legends. That is a series that has laid fallow to for too long. Yeah. Okay, so I've got mine. For my tank, I will pick Wolf from Sekiro. Can be a very good kind of like dodge tank, you know, dex tank. Technically cannot die, so it has that going for him. For support, I kind of blanked on this one, so I will say Zelda. You know, because she generally has a lot of magic, and if you're thinking Echoes of Wisdom, she has the ability to spawn in a bunch of stuff to help out with the fights. And for DPS, a commander from StarCraft. You can literally drop a nuke and just bring the full force of an entire interstellar military to bear on them. Might be cheating. Yeah. I don't know. Jala, how about you?
Well, my DPS would be Dark Luna from Lunar the Silver Star. She literally sucked all of the life out of the planet. I think that would be a...
That counts a little bit.
I don't think the DPS would get that much bigger unless you go black holes and stuff. Anyway, support would be Yuna from Final Fantasy X. I dig it. Healer. Aeons,
yeah,
like Yuna in general, so solid.
Yuna's then, good.
For my tank, I would say Chris Redfield. No, actually, like I would only say that just because I'm obligated to put a Resident Evil character. My actual answer, my actual answer otherwise would be instant death spikes from every video game ever, and the reason is because the only thing that instant death spikes are injured by is Alucard's specific armor.
True.
The spike breaker armor. That's
this is good. What if you're fighting Alucard though?
I know. That's my only weakness. My only weakness.
Okay. Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
So I feel like if I wanted to cheat, I'd just say like the various Warframes for all of them. If I, one that I think would be fun but doesn't quite work is I was trying to think like different from games. So, like the Hunter for DPS, the, you know, your Soulsborne sword and board dude for defense. But then, like, there's not really much in the way of support.
You could probably pick like a character from. Like a FromSoft game that was.
I mean, I guess
like
you could go
label.
Like Plain Doll.
She can help level up. Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah. I mean, Vicar Mioia is technically a cleric and is adorable. So
is a deer girl. Yeah. Fits in. Could pick Ronnie. As support for sorcery, general sorcery stuff.
The other one though, I would pitch would be Doom Guy for tank because he's like an invincible eternal warrior.
Okay.
Isabel for support because, you know, she can manage the money and, you know, make sure we can afford can afford you know, ammunition, guns and stuff like that.
Okay. Good going up against the Ugly Machine's choice for Tom Nook, right?
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah, and then I think for DPS, Isabel piggybacking on Doom Guy.
Okay. Yeah, they work together.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Ben, round us out.
All right. My theming is Ménage à Trois, which are characters from French video games. So
okay.
Ezio for DPS, because a kill per second is pretty good DPS.
Okay.
And let's see. Support is going to be Connor from Detroit Becomes Human. Because having a robot on your side.
Basically a wizard, yeah.
And then the inspiration for this theme, all the costumes I saw at PAX, is a goddamn mime from Clair Obscur for the tank.
Okay. Because you just make the wall?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Wait, what is Clair Obscur about?
Gotta play it or listen to whatever episodes we talked about.
Yes. Yeah. It's about an expedition to get to a pillar that sets how old people can get.
I thought this was like some sort of sci-fi game or some shit.
Kind of sci-fi, military, Final Fantasy kind of thing.
I know this trick's been done before, but it's a French JRPG, so it's a JRPG, and that's okay, the genre it is.
I mean, yeah. It can't be, if we're talking weird French games, it can't be any weirder than I Divine Cybermancy.
Is that French?
Yep.
Okay. For some reason, I thought that was Croatian.
I think it's at least based on French surrealism.
Okay. Yeah, I'll probably need to look that up in a break because that'll take too much. let's see. It is French. It is a French French studio. Okay. Yeah, you get a pass this time. Uh-huh. Yeah. That was a fun question and fun answers from everybody. Thank you so much for answering, and thank you to Dennis for writing in. If you would like to participate in these in the future, follow us on Blue Sky. That is thelevelpodcast.bsky.social, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the stories, the things that are happening in the world of video games around us and how we feel about them. I'll get us started here. This is a follow-up from last week's story where we talked about there being an announcement about an announcement from the Silksong team, from Team Cherry. Apparently, their announcement was indie games can't happen for the rest of the year. Because they said, hey, listen, our game that people have been waiting for almost a decade is going to be coming out in less than 2 weeks and also for $20. And yeah. So an inverse of what happens with Grand Theft Auto 6 has happened in the indie game space. Grand Theft Auto 6, they said, hey, it's not going to be coming out in late 2025. It's going to be coming out in 2026. So all of a sudden, a bunch of games came in and filled the vacuum. With with Silksong, there were a bunch of games that were kind of planning to come out in the regularly unproblematic September to November corridor that have had to vacate in order to make sure that their opening weeks, which are super crucial for sales rankings and algorithmic success, would not be affected.
So what you're saying is that Silksong is only coming out because GTA was delayed.
I don't know about that. They did not cite that. I just think that what Team Cherry did by making everybody wait so long and then saying, hey, this game everybody is going to want to play literally is coming out in 2 weeks was maybe just a little bit unfair to other people in the relatively small and vulnerable community of indie game developers.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in saying, is that assigning too much blame to them?
It's just reasonable.
It's just an interesting development where video games now are acting like movies, where it's like people are staking claims to certain weekend releases, and that's becoming more of like a strategy developing around how you make revenue with releasing a game.
Yeah.
Also, it's been that way for the algorithm makes everything worse.
Yes, it does make everything worse. It's been that way for a little bit. Like, you know, even 20 years ago, nothing wanted to come out in August because of Madden. And nothing wanted to come out in October or November because of either Call of Duty or Assassin's Creed, right? Stuff just like wanted to move out of the way of that. November, there was usually a big Nintendo game. Kind of a thing. So like there's this big list of games that have had to evacuate that corridor in order to not just be Bigfooted. By this game. Oftentimes this decision was made by the publisher and not the developer themselves. They didn't, you know, developers didn't want to make their players wait. They didn't see that there was a, they didn't see that there was, you know, effective competition. Like Silksong is an entirely different kind of game. But like, you know, there are tons of articles with all kinds of lists about things. Like the big one that I was looking at that I wanted to try out and play was Demon School. This is a tactical RPG that kind of takes a little bit of cues from Persona. Not only did it have to clear out from early September because of Silksong, it had to clear out of late September because of the Final Fantasy Tactics re-release, the remaster that was coming out. Because similar, you know, if you want to play a tactical RPG, FFT is going to probably, you know, take priority for you. I don't know. I basically, my main purpose in bringing this was to ask, like, does this seem like it was unfair by Team Cherry to give so little notice about this thing that, like, literally became this meme that everybody was waiting to jump on it whenever it was going to come out?
I mean, I still want there to be an option for teams to do this, you know, because it's like, it's this same level of excitement, like when, like, musicians drop an album without any advance notice and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a fan of that, it can be really cool, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but an album is only an hour, and Silksong has like 40 bosses. This is going to be so fucking long. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts on that? No. Who's going to pick up Silksong? Am I going to be like the only person who's going to pick it up, play like an hour, and then drop it forever?
I mean, Ben's going to be free on Game Pass, so
true.
Dave will be picking it up for us. So
yeah. Cool.
I just hope it doesn't have all of the like glitchy narrative breaking glitches the previous one had.
Oh, I don't remember any of that got in my way playing that back in like 2017.
The one I remember is if you enter a room where dialogue could happen and then exit the room before the dialogue will happen, it won't happen again.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Which is most relevant in instances where you're like trying to make a jump, and so you'll literally fall through the room where the dialogue would happen.
Oh, that seems like something they would fix.
Yeah, but they didn't? No idea, but that is why I stopped playing. So maybe they fixed it since.
Okay, yeah. Moxie, what's the story you brought?
Yeah, so it's very strange. The Division, after the Warlords of New York expansion, was kind of put into maintenance mode. However, and they announced a new free-to-play game, you know, The Division Heartland. But then eventually they canceled Division Heartland. And decided that they've actually want to keep developing The Division 2 for a while.
Okay.
And it's actually a really interesting thing to look into. It's not the point of this story, but there's actually like the team that kind of turned the game around. They literally assigned 5 developers to the game.
5 people?
Yes.
Individually?
Yep.
That doesn't seem like enough.
No, but somehow they, managed to kind of turn the game around and, you know, keep the lights on. But
the entire story of this game, like post 2018, just seems to be we're operating in such a big company that nobody can notice what we're actually doing here.
Yep.
Okay. Glad to find that is true. Yeah.
Yeah. That seems to be accurate. But relevant event to this story is they've just announced a ton of new content, but what I find most interesting is they're bringing back the survival mode from the Division 1. For people who don't know, Division 1 takes place during like a once in a 100 years blizzard that's hitting New York City. Shortly after a worldwide pandemic has toppled society. And the survival mode is kind of a what-if scenario where your helicopter crash lands in the middle of the city in the middle of a blizzard. And so you have to make your way across this city that's, you know, filled with enemies and extract. It's, you know, an extraction shooter effectively. But what makes it interesting is since there's a blizzard going on, you have almost zero visibility and you need to maintain your warmth. So you can either do this by like lighting like trash barrel fires and standing near them, or by literally just like using incendiary weapons and, you know, being near the resulting flames, stuff like that.
Okay.
But it's a neat mechanic because it, you know, kind of in a very organic way, it gives a lot of the same effect as like a PUBG, like the slowly shrinking wall, in that it makes it so you can't just turtle. But unlike PUBG, instead of it being, you know, you decide where you light fire and you can light fire, you know, as you're going. But on the other hand, like when you do, everyone else in the game, you know, knows that there's presumably someone near that. Fire.
Oh, so that's like a beacon to draw them in.
Exactly. Yeah. The other interesting thing is it actually has some survival mechanics. So like, you can actually get infections and stuff like that and have to treat them. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, theoretically possible to succumb to, you know, sickness instead of just getting shot to death.
Okay.
So really excited. It was, you know, really a standout part of the first game. They're also bringing back, let me get the name right, Magnus Jansen, I think is the name, as the creative director, who I believe was the overall creative director of the Division 1. Okay. And definitely was the creative director of the survival mode from Division 1.
Okay, so they're like getting the band back together.
Exactly, exactly. So yeah, this just seems pretty cool. Seems like something I'm excited to see.
Has the Division 2 required any secondary purchase since it came out in 2019?
So the full-on expansions require purchase. So that's, you know, the Warlords of New York and then recently Battle for Brooklyn.
Okay.
And then there's season passes that you can pay for. However, like, you know, all of the actual content patches and stuff like that they've been doing, none of those require any pay for.
Okay.
It's also, and I did not know this off the top of my head, there's a streamer that's real popular, Rogue Gold, who did an analysis of this. Apparently, Magnus Jansen in the first game said that like his biggest regret from the first game was making the survival mode something they charged for, because it then split the community.
Yeah.
So presumably that suggests that this is not going to be charged for. But, okay. You know, you never know.
It's Ubisoft, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I will say, though, like, overall, this is a game that's done fairly, you know, reasonable as live service games go.
Cool. Yeah. Nice movement.
Yep. I'm really excited. Division 3 is announced, although they have not announced where it's set. So
you don't know where you need to move next.
Exactly. Exactly. My big hope is just anywhere but the Pacific Northwest.
Hey,
come on. I want to move there.
But that is, if I get to move there, then I'm fine. But if not, we don't need another game set in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, true. Yeah. Yeah. It has been a little bit of a little bit of a hot spot.
It's like a bunch of developers live there.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know why it took offense for a place I've never lived, but just like, wait a minute, don't criticize me for wanting to move to Portland. Come on. All right. Yeah.
Have we ever done the multiplayer, like, where would you like to see a modern game set?
I'm sure we have.
I have no recollection. It's impossible to say. Ben, what's happening? What's Call of Duty in Hollywood doing
I can't
bring myself to care about?
I saw that so many times that I was like, I don't have a story this week. Spoiler.
Ben, go ahead. Go ahead. Run uphill for us here.
Here's the TLDR. Is Activision is making a video game movie with Paramount. And so they're making a Call of Duty movie. Paramount makes terrible video game choices, has been making pretty good movie choices this year. So it's a coin flip if this will be any good or not.
So have they announced, is it Call of Duty or Call of Duty Black Ops?
They said it's going to be based on the Call of Duty franchise, like just in general.
Okay, because those are two very different things.
Yeah.
One has a decent story, the other does not.
This is practically a nothing story because the press release that Paramount did had little to no information about it that was actually substantial. They just said, like, we're going to make it as good as Top Gun Maverick. You guys like that movie, right? And then that's it. No director attached, no writer attached, nothing about, like, the plot or anything like that. Just that they're going to make it, y'all.
Hey, do you remember the last big military propaganda movie that came out that people enjoyed? How they get them planes so fast? Huh?
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, what are the scenarios? Are there any scenarios where this isn't awful?
I mean, this is just based on my taste, but, like, the only way that they can make it something that is, like, unique to being a Call of Duty movie would be the Modern Warfare 4 kind of storyline. I think
that the invading Washington DC,
that was the Ukraine one. The Modern Warfare 3 was like the invading the homeland thing.
Okay,
correct me if I'm wrong, Ben.
I think that's right. I only played that one once at my brother's place,
though. You didn't care for it. Yeah.
I think what I'd be curious to see if they try and do is do something like piggyback on A24's success and try and get, like, an Alex Garland, like, warfare or, like, a civil war
kind of
situation
thing,
going. But, but he's busy making Elden Ring. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I would watch a Black Ops movie, like, if they just went full on, like,
conspiracy theory.
Like Cold War conspiracy theory, like, you know. Although if you're going to do that, just, like, make a Metal Gear Solid movie.
Kinda.
I think they kind of have their work cut out for them, because it's like any plot that they have is probably going to be expensive because of all the props and things that they'll need to use. So
what if they made it a isekai where it's just someone gets transported into Call of Duty?
Oh my god, my next route is a war criminal in Tunisia. Oh man. I don't know, it's just hard because, you know, I haven't touched Call of Duty in forever. And so everything about it seems generic military to me. And that is even with me knowing that they've gone to space and that, like, this new one that's coming out, the new Black Ops, is like you go to Silent Hill sci-fi realms and stuff.
Yeah, like, if they did zombies, you could make a great zombie mode movie.
That actually might be interesting, but I don't know that they're gonna do that.
No. Yeah, like, from what I recall, they like, a lot of their more unique storyline stuff is just, like, they went real big into the whole, like, what if ANCAP wet dream, where, like, all military is mercenaries.
So just MGS4.
Yeah, and I was about to say, so why not just make a Metal Gear Solid movie?
Yeah.
thinking about it just kind of reveals how like their IP is like a complete shit show, like where it's like so sprawling and like very prone to make missteps, it seems like. So.
It feels like something they were put under some kind of goblin's curse to keep making.
So anyway, not high hopes, but we'll see.
I don't know. You can always be surprised. There might be something. I don't know. I look forward to covering it on Adaptation Decay, I guess.
I feel like the worst thing of this is there's just no good, even more so than the actual games, there's no good way to get around the fact that they definitely intend this game to not be political.
Yeah, so like that's the thing. Like Call of Duty 4, I think, is like the most memorable story out of them because it has like those really high moments. Also, that is about Ukrainian separatists and like factional wars inside of Russia. So I don't know. It's a little bit hot buttony.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see. There are literally no details other than the least inspiring IP wants to make a war movie, which is a genre that has existed for literally as long as film has. Anything else? Sounds like we want to button it up. Can anybody confirm?
Buttons.
Thank you, Jawa. But credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 556. We appreciate you taking the time. You know what you can do to help us, leaving ratings or reviews, telling your friends, or supporting the Duckfeed Patreon. All of it makes a big difference for us. Jala, what's happening over at Jala's place?
All right. So with all the things going on in my life, there hasn't been an episode until a few days ago. There was a month between. So missed a couple of, I think, a couple of episodes so far.
I think people understand.
Yeah. It's going to continue to be kind of whatever. However, that one was on the science of grief. And for pretty obvious reasons, I was studying that in the middle of all the caretaking and everything. And doing so was really helpful. So that episode is out there for folks because everybody is inevitably touched by grief at some point. Because, you know, you lose people, you lose pets, you have big life changes, your best friend moves across the country, or... you know, you have a breakup, a divorce, or whatever, changing a job, any of that kind of stuff can trigger grief. So knowing a little bit about how that works in your brain and your body is very interesting. And it's also very, very helpful. At least I found it to be so. So that is available for folks. The next episode of my show, whenever that comes out, will be about the Superman 2025 movie. I cannot wait to watch it with my mom so that she can see that Crypto is basically just a CGI version of my dog.
Oh, that's so funny. You shared some very cute videos of Pooh with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's adorable. Absolutely adorable. And she also, like, Crypto looks like her. Crypto is a fake. Crypto is an imposter. It's actually based on the director's dog. And, like, they literally took, you know, video and stuff of the dog and then sent it for that to become Crypto. So nice. That's who that dog is. But my dog does look like Crypto from the movie.
So. Excellent.
Anyway, so you can find those at jalachan.place where all of my episodes are. Also, you can catch me streaming. I want to say thanks to all the folks who have popped up. This last time that I got back to streaming after everything happened, there were a few more people that popped in that hadn't been in before. So I just wanted to say thank you to all of those folks. And thanks in advance for anybody who catches me streaming. Any other rest of the time, it really does help me out with just... moving forward. So
this little morale boost to have people popping in.
It's good to talk to people every day.
So. Yeah. Something I forgot to mention, if you are going to be in the region for the Portland Retro Game Expo, we have decided on a day and venue for the meetup that we're going to do for the Portland Retro Games Expo. I just need to make sure I'm in the right month of my calendar here. It is very elusive. On Saturday, October the 18th, we will be at Quarter World Arcade and Bar in Portland, Oregon, to have a meetup with both ourselves, me and Gary, and Watch Out for Fireballs, and the Retronauts. We're doing a joint meetup at Quarter World over in Eastern Oregon. It's a good time. It's like a 12-minute Lyft ride. Come out, hang out, talk with us, play some cool pinball and arcade, and have a good time.
For the record, I imagine you meant Eastern Portland, not Eastern Oregon.
Yes, I did. I'm going to say I did mean, yes, Eastern Portland. There we go. We're not moving across the entire state. Thank you. But yes, Quarter World. Just do a search for that. We also have a post up on our Patreon about that. I think that is pretty much everything. I have been K Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at k.zone, K-A-Y-E.Z-O-N-E.
I'm sorry, I'm not used to this setup. This order, Moxie in Occupied DC.
I'm Jellichon in all the places I might be found, including Jellichon.place, where my show is.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
I have a couple of those.
Okay, give them to me.
Okay, the first one is Bad Press for Sharks.
Okay.
And the other one is Go Where the Hurt Is.
I like that one. That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have any. Moxie, what do you have?
I don't have any.
Oh, no. Ben? Ben shaking his head.
Yeah.
I mean, Jala, so since you're the only person who bothered to write anything down, Jala, what are you
holding the podcast together?
Yeah, yeah. What do you want? What do you want?
Well, Go Where the Hurt Is was the one that you liked the best. We can do that.
Oh, okay. That'll be fine. All right. Go Where the Hurt Is. Okay, talking about the multiplayer question. It is decided because Jala decided it.